Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Hello and welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. We're coming to you today with another metacast, a bit of behind-the-scenes info. Today we're talking about starting a campaign.
Yes.
I am your host today, yeah, Bryn Monroe, and with me I have...
Alexander J. Newell. I've been usurped.
For once, this is my show. I'm running it, and I will be talking to Alex and getting all the behind-the-scenes info from him. So today we're talking about starting a campaign, and what we wanted to do is talk you through everything that happened before the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast really started. It may look effortless, but I can tell you from first-hand experience that Alex worked very hard to make sure everything happened.
Ish.
everything we needed was in place. And I'm going to talk to him a bit about all those things he did. And hopefully some of that will be useful to any of our listeners who want to start a game of their own.
We'll try and make it nice and generalised.
Campaign. And maybe you'll learn everything you need to give it a go yourself and start your own game, we hope. And if you do, let us know. Come on our forums.
Well, we've already had people getting in contact to let us know. They have.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is great. People are like, fantastic. Oh, I started my new game. And you know who you are. I won't say your name, but I know I am meaning you specifically, and you know who you are. I want to know more. Let me know what happened. I'm genuinely curious.
We'd love to hear any stories you have of the games you've been playing and anything that's anything about Rusty Quill that's influenced you.
Ooh.
That would be very exciting for all of us to know that there were people who had done things differently based on our advice or our example. So we've got a few things to talk about today, but yeah, we'll just talk about how we ended up at session one, effectively.
Sure.
Now, you might remember if you listened to our other Metacast, the thing we labelled episode zero was another behind-the-scenes Metacast.
Mm-hmm.
That was talking about the characters we made, but that was talking very much in the numbers sense and the mechanics of it all and the rules of it all.
Well, it was very intended for people who've never even played the game before to actually understand how the heck we ended up with with something, a maths story, I suppose, isn't
it? there's sadly a lot of maths in role-playing. So we're going to try and avoid that today and talk about sort of all the other aspects you need before you sit down to play your first game. And the first thing you need, really, is a bunch of friends.
That was the hard part. The rest came easily, but finding some friends was really difficult.
It's something we've all struggled with at times in our lives.
I find free alcohol and lots of provided food is really, really useful.
We don't drink while recording.
Oh, no.
You can role play with any number of people. I have found from extensive experience. I've been role-playing, I think, since I was 12.
Yeah, you've been role-playing a lot more than I have.
And I'm now 31, so that's a fair old time. And pretty consistently for those almost 20 years.
I am absolutely certain, because I met a couple, you've been RPing longer than some listeners have been alive.
Oh, that's kind of sad. Never mind. I found in my extensive experience that the best size for an RPG group is 3, 4, or 5 players and a GM. 4 and a GM tends to be the ideal, and obviously that's what we've got for Rusty Quill. 3 works pretty well. 5 can be fine as well. Smaller, and you start to struggle to kind of do everything you want to do. Larger gets very unwieldy very quickly.
There was one person I knew who ran a campaign session briefly with 12.
Oh.
It was intended to branch off into separate storylines, but he had a real trouble. I think they ended up spending a significant amount of time digging a hole, because the tendency of people to go off on one and sort of tear it apart to see behind the curtain when it comes to the campaigns get very deconstructive.
It's very difficult to just manage that many people, to give them all enough time to be heard and to influence the story and to enjoy themselves. And I mean, the other thing is, if you're a listener of our podcast, you'll see that fight scenes take a little while.
Oh, yeah.
They, unfortunately, just the simple rules of the situation mean they take a while, and that gets so much worse the more characters you throw in.
Yeah, the other thing to bear in mind is, for every new person, don't get me wrong, I like playing with a decent number of people, but the problem you get is, it's about focus, and you have to have, every single person in that has to be willing to have less and less focus time.
Yeah.
So if you're playing with 6 people, I've done it and it can work, but you need 5 other people, including yourself, who are like, yes, I'm quite happy to have 1/6 of the time and spend almost all of the time watching other people do stuff, which is a fine way to do it, but if you're wanting that limelight, it doesn't gel well.
Yeah, I think I once played a game where there were 6 PCs, 6 player characters, and we did one fight scene that lasted an entire 5-hour session, which was about a minute of in-game time, more or less. It got pretty ridiculous.
I did something similar with a group of 4, except 3 of the people had versions of Time Stop. So Time Stop is a spell for listeners which literally allows you to stop time and, you know, run around, do things, and then time restarts. But when you have 3 people that do it, what you end up is stopping time, doing a whole load of combat, stopping time, doing a whole load of combat, stopping time, doing a whole load of... And suddenly you realise that what you've done is you've spent, 3 hours on an instantaneous moment. And that's the most extreme version I've ever seen.
Literally no time has
passed. No time has passed and everything's been... that's the most extreme version I ran into.
So I think you knew from the very beginning that you wanted 4 players. You decided I think most people would say that playing is often more fun than GMing. I've certainly enjoyed GMing at times. Mm. Genuinely, it is, you know, it's a bit of a sacrifice because the GM has to put in a lot more effort and you decided that you were going to GM the game.
Sure. I mean, ultimately, long term, I'm probably going to end up passing over GMings sometimes to other people and things like that. And we've already done recordings where that's the case and it's fine. It doesn't bother me. Yeah. I'd say main reason I picked to do GM is there's a couple of reasons. One is, and this is a great piece of advice, if you can GM, you will always have a gaming group.
Yes.
Yeah, you will always have a gaming group. If you don't know how to GM, it's worth looking into it because then when you're hankering and there's no one around, you can just make your own group.
Yeah.
And people will come if you can GM.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to get things wrong. In my experience, the first few times I GM'd, it didn't go very well. I didn't write good games. Like, it's one of those things that requires experience. And I'm sure you found similar, that you've gotten better the more times you've done it.
Yeah. I cut my teeth on a lot of very, very long campaigns. So I'd say you get into habits with the kind of games you play. So if you GM a lot of one-offs, you end up doing things very quick, very short.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you try to do something longer, I guarantee you the first thing that you'll do is drop everyone's backstory in the first 15 minutes of the first game. And you'll be like, oh, there's nowhere to go. But similarly, if you do long burn ones, my habit, which is great for podcasting, terrible for one-offs, is I massively underestimate how long things take when I'm planning. So it means that the bright side from the GMing thing is that you can end up planning, I don't know, oh yes, this will last 2 sessions and it lasts you 10. Great.
Yeah.
That's 8 sessions that you got that you didn't realise you needed, you didn't even need to plan for. But on the flip side, on a one-shot, it's terrible. The number of one-shots I've run that never finished.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Just because I ended up making something that actually would last over 5 or something.
I found a lot of the time I would plan loads and then my players would do something completely different anyway. And
sure.
So it's worth talking to your players a bit sort of outside the game too, to just check in on them and make sure that you're not planning something they're going to ignore, and
yep.
That if you have some at least small idea about their intentions, it allows your planning to be more useful and more likely to get used.
I like doing open world things where characters can choose where they go, but what I also will say is please choose in between sessions so that I can plan things up. Not because you can't do things on the fly, it's more a case of you will always get something more in depth and it'll be faster because you can look up things ahead of time rather than on the fly. Mm. So I will always say, okay, cool, you can go anywhere you want, you can do anything you want, but build plans.
Yeah,
and I know
absolutely.
That build plans can be the boring part of play, which I really strongly advise, getting people to communicate with one another outside of games
yes,
and making their plans,
absolutely.
Passing them straight onto the GM who can sort of coordinate to it. If you're trying to keep secrets from your GM to make the game more winnable, I strongly advise you not to do that because it will impact your game negatively.
It should
hugely.
Absolutely not be about winning. I mean, role-playing is, you know, about the experience and the story. And if your goal is to win, someone's going to lose.
Yes, yes.
And it might be you.
It swings both ways, actually. I've known plenty of GMs who weren't willing to lose, which means that they weren't willing to let the players win. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, yeah. So you knew you wanted 4 players.
Yes.
And how many people did you contact? You contacted quite a few initially
to gauge interest. The thing that you'll find when you're setting up gaming sessions is a lot of it comes down to logistics.
Yeah.
And it is just timetables and things. So I contacted geeks I knew, performers I knew, and comedians I knew, voice actors I knew, things like that. And then I basically made a Venn diagram. And there is one criteria which I had, which is not actually, you know, a normal criteria for gaming, which is I had to make sure that everyone had distinct enough sounding voices.
Yes, I worry a bit that I sound a bit too much like a cross between Ben and James.
I always think I sound about 16 years old, perpetually, forever.
And, you know, if you're hoping to set up your own game, find some friends. Like, you know, they don't have to be people who've gamed before,
no,
you know.
Not at all.
Obviously, I've done a huge amount. Ben's done quite a lot. Lyd's done a bit. And James has done almost none in the past.
Yeah, James is a bit of the wild card because it was he knows so many people that I know and had never managed to get drawn into the gaming thing.
And, you know, that's obviously part of setting up a new group is in potentially having players who've never done it before and having
sure.
new players. If you literally have no friends who want to game, then obviously the internet is a great resource to find gaming groups and find people. And you could even come along our forums and ask people there if they
can find
a gaming group.
I mean, actually, I run a long campaign entirely online, which is a way of doing it. It can work. There's a few...
I've played some online games I haven't enjoyed.
There's a few hang-ups. A few tricks that I learnt was if it's possible to get things via something like TeamSpeak rather than Skype, because
right.
it uses less bandwidth
yeah.
and things like that. Also, you need to have a group who are really good at taking turns speaking. And I used to use Google Docs as battle maps. It's a free alternative. Nice. Don't get me wrong, yep. There are a lot of really well-made, now paid, online tabletop setups, some of which even factor in like the chat aspect and things like that. I strongly recommend you check them out. I was on an incredibly tight budget and I used to do it all via modified Google spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. So I would alter the size and do it like that. But that was in order to carry on playing with a gaming group where we went to different countries and spread out across the globe. But in general, I'd say it's much more preferable to play it in person when you can. It's vastly different experience.
So, you know, we've all... I've known James a long time.
Yeah.
We first met at university, but obviously, and I've known Lyd for a few years, and I've known you for a few years. And then, obviously, the rest of us only met Ben because of this podcast, because he was someone that only you knew beforehand.
But. Yeah, and yeah, it was. I'd made the point of getting people who I knew could perform and game. But that's because this is for other people to listen to.
Yes.
I'd say it makes for a pleasant experience. I've gamed with people who are lovely, lovely, lovely people, but are terrified of the whole performing thing, which is fine until it becomes to RPing, and then some of them are just terrified to do it, which is fun. They love role-play games and hate RPing.
I mean, the most difficult part, really, in putting a group together is simply scheduling it. And we said that, you know, we were saying that the people who ended up in the podcast were the ones who could absolutely commit. We play once every 2 weeks.
Yes.
And that's how often we record and play. Now, I have found in the past that it's very difficult to achieve that level of consistency. And I've played in games where it was once a month.
Yeah.
Which is an easy schedule to stick to, but it means that if you ever miss a game, suddenly
it's
games
two
are
months,
a
which
huge,
is huge
huge times apart and you forget things and it's hard to keep things going when it's that rare.
In my experience, when it's school or uni, you can maybe be playing a game once a week. I've known people who went
absolutely
off the deep end and played a lot of RPGs.
Yeah. Back at university, I played most of the games I was in played once a week, and that seemed fine, but it's very difficult to sustain as with the rest of adult life going on.
I think with once a week you end up with shorter sessions and it'll be with a group that you've known for a very, very long time. For the newer things, the sort of once a fortnight model seems to be the best in my experience.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about starting up your own game,
I would go with once a fortnight.
Yeah, but do consider that very carefully, because that can be the biggest rock. Like, doing it every week, people are going to miss them. It's going to feel like it takes up a lot of your time. Doing it every month might be great, but it's hard to maintain that momentum.
Yeah.
So get a schedule your group can stick to as best as possible.
There's one way around that, which is the binge game, which is where you get a bunch of people together and you go, right, I have a free weekend. You have a free weekend?
Yeah.
Yes, I have a free weekend. And I've done that before where you start Friday night, and then when Monday morning rolls by, you've spent effectively an entire weekend. Have lots of food. You will run out of food. Have lots of drink and you'll run out of drink. And open windows periodically. It's my health advice on those.
Yeah, so once you've got your group together, I think the next thing that comes on is we talked about choosing a GM. Like, one person, you can't force someone to GM, because it is a lot of work. So someone has to volunteer, and hopefully you've got someone to volunteer.
I would say you should have a GM before you have a group, really.
Potentially,
there are many ways of doing it so that you can effectively pass GMing. It's a knack. I wouldn't advise it first time out the gate, but certainly I've had mercenary bands where they would roll the GM from one session to the next.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that then it's like each mission was GM'd by a different person.
Yep.
I was a big fan. I ran one a long time ago. If you ever saw the TV show Sliders.
Right, yes.
I used to do one where we would slide, and every time there was a slide, you were in a new world, it was a new GM.
Nice.
It helped because it meant that people could dip in and then dip out.
Yeah.
But it's not a very sustainable thing. The thing with GMing, though, is you GM. It's an enormous amount of work. The players need to appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely.
And they don't call the shots. Ultimately, if there's someone who is, you know, who is making the game terrible for everyone else, effectively, the GM, there's a lot of diplomacy involved in GMing. There's a lot of sitting people down and going, look, that character, I really think it's going off the rails, or things like that.
It's your responsibility to keep everything running smoothly, and that can be both in-game ways and out-of-game ways,
but it comes with a trade, which is that it's not your responsibility, which means that you can't have fun.
Yes, absolutely.
I've seen that happen. Don't get yourself trapped in a situation where you're GMing because you should, rather than because you're enjoying it.
If you're not having fun, it's not going to last.
If you're not having fun, stop.
Well, indeed. So you need to make it enjoyable. The other thing I find about GMing is it's exhausting. I remember at the end of a session when I play, I'm a little bit tired. Like, you know, role-playing is always slightly more energetic than I expect it to be.
Yes.
But if I've GM'd a session, like, it's hard for me to do anything in the evening after an afternoon session because I just don't have the energy a lot of the time.
Yeah, I got to admit, that's the thing I find quite hard. So bear in mind that while I'm GMing, I'm also running all of the audio equipment.
A lot of tech work from Alex as well.
A lot of, it won't pick up on the edit and so on, but there's a lot of time where I'm simultaneously GMing and running all of the podcast equipment.
He's basically got a big sound desk behind his chair, which he has to use whilst GMing.
Yeah, get good at thinking on your feet if you're going to GM.
Yes, absolutely.
Because no matter how obvious you make that doorway, they are still going to look for a window that isn't there. And sometimes you just got to concede the point and give them a window.
Yeah. So, and then it's, I mean, really it's got to be the GM's choice, but once you've got your GM, and this can come earlier when you're starting to put the game together, but you've got to choose what you're going to run, what game it's going to be.
Yes.
And there's two sides to that, really. There's system and there's setting.
Do not confuse those two.
Which often come together,
but can
be completely separate.
Yep.
What is system?
So system is the set of rules that you're using. So ultimately, RPGs are collective storytelling, which I have done groups where there is no system. However, it requires a certain frame of mind, and not many people can just dip into that easily, because it requires a lot of ability to allow bad things to happen to a character you care about. You have to be willing to pass focus and just take a back seat. And a lot of these systems are developed to facilitate that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various different types of systems. There's D20, there's Dread, which we got to play a game of. There's a little bit of a spoiler. But ultimately, there's lots of varying systems, but they're very independent from setting, or they can be. A lot of the time, they're tied together.
I mean, most
not
of the time,
equated.
You know, the companies that publish systems and settings publish them together.
Yes.
And you do get, you know, you get a big book which includes both the system and the setting, and the company will tie a lot of the elements of the two together.
Yes.
But you can separate them out again.
Mm-hmm.
Setting is the trappings of the world, the plot lines, the story.
If you put it in computer game terms, it starts to make it very, very clear. Let's think of a game that a lot of people would know, say BioShock.
Mm.
Ultimately, it's a shooter. A shooter is a type of game, but that is not giving you the whole thing of what that game is about. Just as if you were playing something even more obvious, like Call of Duty, for instance, it's also a shooter. But those two are not equating, and it's because the difference is the setting. It's those aesthetic trappings. It's the story behind it. It's the approach to how that story is told.
Absolutely.
And it's separating out from what is the bits and bobs, the nuts and bolts that make this car run, to what color is this car, what's it made for, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, even some of the most famous systems, I mean, D&D is probably the most famous one, has a lot of alternative settings.
Yeah.
So you get Eberron, which is sort of the steampunk-ish world, and you get sort of Greyhawk, which is a much more traditional fantasy world, and those differences. Now, we chose to use the system of Pathfinder.
Yes.
So why was that?
There are a few reasons. Ultimately, the main reason that I chose it was it is the system I am most familiar with.
Yeah.
And I've tried to GM with systems that I'm unfamiliar with, and there is a very steep learning curve that's rubbish to listen to. So I was deliberately picking something that I knew quite well. Don't get me wrong, you will never know all of the system.
Yeah, unless you play in it for years.
You just will not, and that's fine. That's why you have these documents and the system references, and sometimes you just fudge it, and that's fine too.
Yeah.
But for Pathfinder, there was a few reasons. It's a D20 system, which is very popular, but it's quite streamlined.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, we will probably end up ignoring some of the most complicated rules.
Certainly.
And you're free to do that with most systems. You don't have to use every single part of the buffalo.
I really advise you not to, in fact. You won't hear me say that about any other aspect of life. But when it comes to game systems, ultimately, system can give in to setting when it needs to. And that's okay. What I would say is watch out if you're doing it to break the game when you're GMing. If you're going to get people facing off against an unkillable creature that has a bunch of abilities that are just not part of what it should be able to do, that smacks a little bit of trying to have your cake and eat it.
That's,
you know?
That's trying to win again, I think.
Yeah,
that
I
might
think
be
so.
The problem there.
So I tend to make sure that the setting and the system match up.
Yes, and that's And a good setting and system will, and that's important as well. If they're feeding into each other, you'll often end up with a better game.
And the thing I found with Pathfinder is that it's massive. There's a lot of rules in there. I mean, even if you're heading into the grapple rules, which I'm deliberately sidestepping a lot of the time.
They're one of the most complicated bits.
And certainly there are variants out there for called shots and all kinds of things. But the thing with those is it's worth... I chose it because you can modularize it in the sense of you can skip whole chunks of that rule system,
yeah,
and the game is robust enough to just take that. Yeah. So you have a huge compendium of rules that you can pick and choose the buffet from. Delicious. Yeah.
And I mean, role-playing settings come in different categories as well, and sort of Pathfinder is part of what I would refer to as the D20 category. You know, you get the mechanic is based around rolling a D20.
Yeah.
And there are other categories of games where, you know, the mechanic is based around D6s or D10s or whatever.
One day there'll be the D1000.
Yes.
One day. Well,
knowing the variety out there, there probably already is. now, I mean, D20 is, again, popularised by Dungeons & Dragons, D&D, and it has, you know, come through all the various versions. And Pathfinder comes off the 3.5 rules. But since 3.5, which was a game I loved, D&D have released D&D 4.0 and D&D 5.0.
Yeah, we're starting to fall behind.
Yeah, and you know, you can check those out as well. I haven't played much of either of them. I've certainly heard good things about D&D 5.
I'd say they're pretty radically different beasts.
They are surprisingly different to each other.
D&D 4 took a very, very specific route, which was trying to make it way more about story and really stripping back on mechanics. And I think there's a certain pendulum movement to it, especially in a lot of systems where it sort of goes big on rules, and then they'll go too fast, they'll go back to big on story, maybe go a bit too far, swing back to rules. So you always see that sort of swinging.
Yeah. So we decided to go with Pathfinder, and remember that almost all the Pathfinder rules are available online.
Yeah.
The Pathfinder SRD has been very good to us and really helped us do this.
I admit, I swapped onto a paid app version. A couple of reasons for that is when it comes to the podcasting side of things, we have to turn off all the phones, all the devices, anything that can receive a signal. And unlike planes, where, you know, you can kind of get away with it sometimes, I didn't say that. But in podcasting, you really can't because you get a certain noises and interferences. So I needed something that I could access offline.
Yeah.
Because we were getting problems with the podcasting. So the SRD is great. Do not get me wrong. But if you are looking for an offline version, I do recommend the PFRPGRD. God, that's quite the name.
Hard to remember.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Now, we didn't use the traditional Pathfinder setting, which is a pretty traditional, again, sort of fantasy setting. And I think actually one of the best things about, and one of the things I've most enjoyed about Rusty Quill, is the setting that you came up with yourself.
Yes.
And I'm hoping our listeners want to hear about it as well. But before we do, we're going to take a quick break there.
Okay, cool.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello? Hello? Oh, I sit there. I'm talking to this? This? Right. Good. That is odd. Yes. And you, bring me a whiskey. With a rum in it. Yeah, lovely. Yes, so, good evening, peasants. I am Sir Bertrand MacGuffingham. Now, I've been told the tales of my feats of heroism, adventure, and utterly selfless derring-do were spreading far and wide, arcing across the sky like lightning, rending the heavens in twain with their magnitude and ploughing into people's ears like a plough made of me being splendid. Now, the important thing is that I'm excellent, and everyone should know just how excellent I am. So in order to set yet more ears aquiver in anticipation of my every exploit, I would like you, specifically you, to tell your friends about how utterly super I am. Now, according to the technical busybods of Rusty Quill, and trust me, their bods are very busy, if you tell a friend about us and they subscribe to my tales of chivalric daring, then when they send us an email to mail@rustyquill.com with their name and the person who recommended it, they will have an episode dedicated to them. Now, I've no idea what that means, but it sounds jolly lovely. Anyway, once you've done all of that, all you need to do is pop the cash in non-consecutive bills into an envelope and send it along... What? What do you mean they don't have to pay? Oh, I am literally never... Don't! You test me, sir! Fine. Well, recommend us to your friends and don't pay us and you still get your own episode. Now, if it excuses me, I have to have a serious chat with the underlings about the actual meaning of the word mercenary.
Hello and welcome back. So Alex, tell us a bit about how you got to this point and some of the things you've put into this setting.
So I think when it comes to setting, it's a rabbit hole. You can go really deep really quickly and you find yourself giving names to NPCs in an obscure village. There's one 1,000 chance that the party will even go near. You kind of need to draw the line. So what I tend to do is I'll go from top down when making a setting.
Sure.
And I let all the details trickle down, because then when it comes to, oh, I need that small detail, you have that sort of trickle down. You can just pluck it, because what would make sense? So the first thing I'll tend to do is, what kind of tone do I want for the game? And I'll know that before I start going into the setting. So I knew I wanted something quick, loose, fast, fun for Rusty Quill.
Sure.
Where there's a lot of depth to it people want, but ultimately you can skim across that surface and that's fine too, because it's coherent.
Yeah, it's useful to use well-known tropes when you're designing a setting, because it allows people to fill in their own gaps, and it means that you've got go-to places and things you can do if a gap turns up that you need to fill very quickly. You've got something ready to sort of put into that gap, because you're working with common ideas.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't shy away from sort of genre tropes and things like that.
Absolutely.
Just because, I mean, honestly, a lot of people play RPGs because they like them. They want them. They want to be that John Woo character who's dual-wielding pistols, jumping through a church with doves everywhere taking shots. They want to be that guy.
Classic.
So, yes, you could put a spin on it and have pigeons, but I'm pretty certain that a lot of people out there, they want the doves. And that's fine. That's okay. So, yeah, when it came to the setting, I went for big broad strokes, and there's a lot of stuff that hasn't even come up yet, because, I mean, the podcast hasn't been going that long.
And there are some setting documents online, which some of you will have checked out, but they don't go into too much detail. So, you based it on a fictionalized version of the real world. So why that, and why not, you know, a fantasy world more completely?
There's a few reasons for it, one of which is... the world's a big and complicated place, which means you're not really going to fall short of inspiration. Oh, you need to go to Uruguay. Wicked. I can just look up Uruguay, look up all of the information, do all of this reading. Fantastic. I now have a huge amount. When you're heading into Talondor, which exists exclusively in your head, there's extra steps in there because you need to find that material elsewhere and plug it in. So, I mean, I'm not being lazy, but it gives you a lot of inspiration. Another thing I've said before is my geography's terrible. Like, really, really awful. I know a lot of things in a lot of obscure knowledges, but I do not have knowledge geography. So I figured, why not, you know, jump in at the deep end. And the other thing as well is it makes it more accessible. We've got James who've never played before. We've got listeners who've never played an RPG before.
Sure.
And it can be a bit alienating when it's, well, how do you not know the obscure thief hierarchy of this incredibly
niche? And if we're starting to use
niche
place names that are words people have never heard of, they're going to be harder to remember and harder to relate to.
Exactly, exactly. The number of NPCs I've had with obscure names where I cannot remember what their name
yes.
is. And I named the character, so I find it easier to ground it a bit more. But I also deliberately made the setting ahistorical. Completely yep. ahistorical, so you're going to be encountering, you know, characters who have
no... Have we even said what the year is? I don't remember defining exactly what century we're even in.
Brin. I don't subscribe to your narrow-minded view of centuries and
yes.
years.
So Alex has warned me, and as much as it will hurt my, you know, my geeky brain that demands consistency, that people from completely different historical eras may well all turn up together at various points
oh,
in
yeah,
the game.
Oh, yeah, just kicking around, you know. I mean... I find it useful, and here's a tip when playing, when doing NPCs. I find it really helpful when dealing with major NPCs to tie them to famous people, because you know what their voices sound like, you know what they look like. I haven't had to use this too much yet, but it's a great way to just do an impression of that famous person. Your impressions are terrible, my impressions are terrible, so no one will know the famous person that you're referencing.
Well, if it's a historical famous person, hopefully there won't even be any recordings of them, so you can't be 100% sure.
Oh, but what I'm talking about is stuff like, if you guys ever meet Newton, it's definitely going to be Benedict Cumberbatch. you got to cast it, and I find that really useful. It really helps,
sure,
and it gives
sure.
you something to refer back to. And yeah, so I start top-down. I tend to split it into politics.
Yep.
So what's the politics of the place? What's the religion of the place? What's the geography of the place? I loosely do this one. What's the sentiments of the place? So that's more like cultural things. So it's like,
right.
Do everyone hate orcs?
Yeah.
You'll have noticed orcs haven't actually rocked up in the show yet. They will when they come, and they'll have their own twist, because I know what people think about orcs in this setting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know what people think about goblins in this setting. And it's those opinions and things like that that's important. And I will then do a lot of it on the fly, actually. I had a lot of training doing that, so I know how to do it. And you're going to have to learn to riff with it, because your players will surprise you.
Yeah.
They really will surprise you.
And obviously you've thrown a lot of magical and magi-technological
yes.
elements into this setting as well. Did those come from somewhere in particular, or...?
Honestly, I've admitted it before, that there's an element of Eberron in there.
So Eberron, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, is as we were talking about settings earlier, it's a setting for Dungeons & Dragons and the 3.5 edition.
Mm-hmm. And it specialises in... It tried to talk about the industrialisation of magic and other things. And let's assume that magic is real in this world. Why wouldn't you have harnessed it for the following purposes?
Absolutely.
And I like... that element of it. I'm not particularly married to that setting, but I'd like the idea of that coherency, especially given the players that I work with, where we've got James, who's specialised in his education in incredible amounts of depth of political history.
Yes.
And I've got Lydia on the other side, who knows just about everything about specific topics. So I have to make sure, obviously, that it's a coherent world that makes sense. There's a lot of fantasy out there which can be lazy, and I don't mean that in a negative way, commenting on tropes, but I mean... where you don't think about it. Mm. There are orcs in the cave. Why? Because there's orcs in the cave. But they have to be there for a reason. And if you're playing with people who are interested in stories, every person here consumes stories and narratives, and they know the nuts and bolts and how they work and how they're built. So you can't get away with, there's a skeleton in this box. Why? Because there's a skeleton in this box. Like, you want that depth. And a lot of that will come from... sort of knowing what you're talking about and taking time to just mull the world over.
Yeah.
And just don't dive in straight away. Just take a couple of months to just think about the world for a bit.
And another element you've thrown in is on the political side of this setting is that there are these ancient, powerful dragons that rule the human world.
See, a lot of people...
We've barely encountered these in terms of what's going on in the actual game, but because all the players read the backstory, and it's started to come up just a tiny bit here and there, but they're called the meritocrats.
Yes.
So tell us a bit more about them.
Well, I won't go into too much detail because that's I'll be starting to give some
spoilers.
But with the meritocrats, a lot of the themes of this campaign are about responsibility on a big scale and a small scale. Characters are responsible for the actions that they do, but more importantly, you know, people. Large amounts of people are responsible for things they do, and I'm dealing with that.
Yeah.
And when it came to the meritocrats, it was a way of messing around with that a bit. And it was what happens when you take the responsibility for society out of that society's hands and give it to someone else.
For those who haven't read the backstory information on the website, the meritocrats are these six ancient and powerful dragons who essentially are the royalty of the human world, and you know, all political and governmental power flows through them. And so we'll be seeing, I hope, in the upcoming story, you know, is how our characters begin to interact with some of that, those structures.
Well, it makes a lot of sense as well that ultimately you guys are level one characters. The chances of someone meeting a great world leader...
I think you'll find we're level two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Even in the episodes that have been released, we're level two by now.
But that's my point, is that you're so down the sliding scale
of people at this point.
The chances of you rocking up and meeting the Prime Minister when you're still just sort of kicking around as a low-paid... Well, no longer low-paid mercenary band, it doesn't really play out like that.
Mm.
But ultimately, you've got to trail the breadcrumbs. I worked professionally as a writer. Like, that's the thing I do. And a lot of that is you've got to learn to leave those trails of breadcrumbs, mainly because with RPGs, in order to sustain it over a long period, you need mystery.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just rock from one adventure to the next. You need mystery, you need intrigue. And the way that you do that is you dribble those plot
and
points.
Yeah, connecting and threads.
Yeah, you just drop those points through and through and through. And with the meritocrats, is ultimately, they're a very high concept thing,
mm-hmm.
and it takes a long time to get there. So you've got to build up to that. And I think it helps a lot if you're going to deal with a leader. In fact, here's a good GMing tip. If you're going to meet a leader, have the party meet the people that that person leads before they meet that leader. It's a very different experience. If you just rock up and meet the king, you've no idea about the country. Oh, he's really, really friendly and nice. But yeah, if you rock up and meet the king and every other person who's lovely also has an anxious tinge to them and everything's too clean and everything like that before you meet, and it'll allow it to colour it, I think that's important.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Right, so you've now got your group together. You've decided what game you're playing. You've got your system. You've got your setting. And you know, I'd encourage people to write their own settings. I find that even if you're playing an established game, if you're creating your own setting to go with it, you'll often have a more exciting and more interesting time.
I think you'll care about it more.
Yeah,
I really do.
It seems obvious that the next step is starting to make the characters.
Sure.
I mean, and that's really the final one before you start the game. However, I have to say, I think there's a really important step that comes next.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of groups skip over this one. I've certainly skipped over it in the past, and it has many times led to disaster, which is, before you build the individual characters, is build the group. This is an element I pushed really heavily when we were setting up this game.
Yeah.
Because I have fallen foul of it in the past. I have started games and had three of my five people turn up playing almost identical characters because they didn't talk about it beforehand.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you want to know how your party is going to work together. You want to make sure they're all working towards the same goals. I have had campaigns in the past completely sunk by the fact that different members of the party were pulling in different directions.
And you couldn't reconcile it.
You want conflict. You don't want everything to be easy and simple. You want your characters to have that ability to come in conflict with each other, but you want to know that they are broadly going to pull in the same direction in a general sense. Because otherwise, you risk your party being pulled apart, which more often than not will sink the game.
It's a very special group. The first game I ever played, I was incredibly lucky, and I got to play with a great bunch of people who were able to make that work, where the party splintered themselves, pulled themselves apart, but all of the gamers were still great about it, so they formed an entirely new party and also could run those characters on the side, and it would re-thread back in. I have never...
That sounds incredibly complex.
Oh, for the GM, it was incredibly difficult. But I've never known that since. I've never known it where if one character wanders off, where you can sustain that and pull them back into the fold, almost always that character gets abandoned and a new one has to get built. And that's on the positive side. Normally, often it can kill a game.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the first things we discussed when we knew who the four players were going to be is what type of character, without even deciding any specifics, just simply what type of character we were going to play. And we knew that we probably wanted the four classic roles.
Well, honestly, I made that a little bit of a requirement, was that I wanted those classic roles covered, because there's a lot of people who haven't ever played these before.
Absolutely.
What I would say is, as your characters grow, you will specialise more.
Absolutely.
But I strongly advise people in general, even if you're experienced, there's a lot to be said for starting vanilla and growing into it. There's nothing worse than starting with something super specialised and you realise that that's just not what the character wants to be. That's not the character you're playing.
Yeah.
And you can get yourself in trouble. You can end up with an unplayable character because you're playing super, super sarky and talking to loads and loads of people with your charisma of minus 50, but you're amazing at a skill that you've never even used.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Which is a shame.
And, you know, you want to know that you're going to fit in. If you're playing a diplomatic game where three of the four characters are people who enjoy talking through problems and solving them like that, and you're playing someone who's useless at talking and can only fight,
yes,
you're going to find that the game is a lot less fun. Because
yes,
you will switch between the two, and you want characters who can get involved in any given situation.
Yes.
So we went for the classic split. We've got a fighter, a rogue, a cleric, and a wizard.
Yes. Nominally.
Ish. Wizard-ish. And that is a very classic spread. It means you address, you know, every problem to at least some degree. And what we went with is James elected to play the fighter because he's the least experienced.
Yes.
And in general, at least, a fighter is simpler in terms of the rules that apply to them.
I would also say that the fighter comes with a trap. And the trap is that when you're holding a hammer, everyone looks like a nail. And the thing with the fighter is you've got to remember that the fighter isn't just a combat beast. They have to exist outside of combat.
We didn't have any worries. We didn't have any worries that James would not get involved in.
Yeah,
James
has been really amazing at that. When it came to his story, I don't think I ever have encountered someone who managed to make a fighter who was that interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, I realise I'm teasing a lot of things here, but it works, and fighters can get boring. To be honest, they can, because people...
It's possible. I cannot imagine Bertie getting boring.
No, not really. But I mean, though, is that when it's a difference between hitting something with a metal stick and commanding the cosmos to your will, it feels like there's a disparity there, but actually, there's a lot of give in both of them if you know what to do.
Yeah. And then I think Lyd's opted for the rogue type character because that's something she enjoys and has done a little more often. I mean, she, you know, she has played a bit in the past, but not a huge amount.
Certainly not in this system.
So me and Ben, as the more experienced role players, knew we'd probably both end up as the casters. And I think I just offered him the choice and we would have been happy either way, essentially.
Yeah. You will end up finding yourself playing roles a lot at first that are similar roles because it feels like what you want to do. But once you get your fill, you'll tend to branch out a bit more.
Yeah. I've played almost every character I can imagine in my many, as we established earlier, many years of role-playing. So I'm happy playing anything. And now, you know, I'm playing this sort of very classic example of a halfling sorcerer, which is good fun.
Who's, you know, becoming a dragon.
If he lives that long. Keep your fingers crossed for me, listeners.
But talking about getting parties that will be coherent together, one of the things that has proved difficult in the past, and this is through no fault of player at all, is Sasha. Sasha's a good example of the character that wants to be independent and break off on their own and has got perfectly good legitimate reasons to be reticent about joining groups and things.
Yeah.
And a lot of time was spent talking with Lydia, how do we rectify this?
Yeah, and sometimes you have to do a little bit of talking outside of character and outside of the game to make sure things head in the right direction.
And you need to do that maintenance.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is a lot of people will set the game up, set it off running and assume it's just a little clockwork doll that goes off and it just clicks and clacks and clicks. No, you should check in. You should check in after every session with your party.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I like to do in the most recent couple of games I ran as a GM, I would tell my party that they had to start knowing each other and they had to start as an already established group.
You're telling me that you didn't meet in a tavern?
Yeah, indeed. And I found that very successful. Now, obviously, we didn't do that for this game because we felt it wouldn't be a very good listening experience if we just jumped into four characters who all knew each other well. But obviously, one of the little things we did get is that we put in a tiny bit of backstory where Hamid and Bertie knew each other already, which gave us a hook in. We did talk about setting up, even before that very first gaming session, the idea that we'd probably all end up working for Zolf's mercenary company.
Yes.
And that's not cheating, you know. This is making sure the group end up together and end up working together is not breaking the rules, it's making sure the game goes well.
Yes.
And you can know where you're heading without knowing the specifics of how you get there, and it doesn't damage the experience of the game.
Yeah, exactly. You need that tie-in in that link. And yeah, things panned out really quite nicely for us, actually. I'd say a lot of canny listeners will have noticed that certainly in later episodes, I'm a lot less strict about where things are going. And for the simple reason that is, as an advice to all GMs, you will find it easier if you railroad. For listeners who don't know what that is, sorry, railroading is where you are...
You put the party on tracks, essentially.
Effectively.
And force them down a single route.
Forcing, yes, that's the negative side of it. What I would say is, I use railroading a bit loose and free as a term.
Yeah,
what I would say is you need to be very,
not
very...
Not that negative.
You need to be very, very tight in your focus at the start.
Yeah.
And you want to give limited choices and let people find their way into those roles by giving them A and B choices, A, B and C choices, before you just go, here is an entire open world, how do we deal with this? And yeah, I'd say that you'll notice certainly as the sessions go on that tightness of focus, now that everyone knows what their reactions
Absolutely.
Are, know how they interact, that's not really necessary anymore. So there's going to be a lot more freedom with it.
Yeah, so the final thing we really did before we started making our individual characters is we talked about having a group goal. Is, you know, we talked about how our roles and
yes.
which role we'd end up taking, but we talked about having a shared goal for the group. And if you're a player and you're working with other players to build this, you know, your goal might be, you know, a heroic goal, a classic sort of, we are heroes, we want to fix the world.
Uh-huh.
It might be the classic evil goal, we want to acquire power. I mean, we went for a more classic mercenary group.
Sure.
That was the decision we made, the four of us. We wanted to be a group of mercenaries. But once you actually prioritised glory over money,
yeah.
at least some of the time.
Yeah.
And that was what we decided on, a shared goal. And so the idea was to build characters who would be able to fit into the group, fit and fit together, and all be able to share that as a long-term goal.
Yeah, your friend when you're building these characters and working with your GM is the word why.
Yes.
Here's your big group goal. That's fantastic. You can pick any group goal you want. Why? Why does your character care? Oh, they care because of blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but why did that happen? Why, why? And you have to drill down and drill down and drill down and drill
Absolutely.
Down until eventually you hit something so utterly fundamental.
And once you know your role, once you know where your group is going, that's when you can finally work on your individual character,
yes.
both from the mechanical perspective. And the last thing we're going to talk about today is the backstories. You know, our characters we've written pretty long, I think, backstories, you know, the history of the character.
Yeah.
Now, you gave us all a list of what we should include. Do you remember
sure.
what was on that list?
Off the top of my head, I used a lot of ones that I've used before. So each character needed to have a secret that the others couldn't know. And part of that was a secret that they keep from almost everyone, because I think it's important to have that secret. It gives
yeah.
people something to be touchy about. All of them have a fear. All of them have a need goal, as it were. And all of them have opinions on certain aspects of the story world.
Yeah.
And there's a whole coherent list. I should dig that up at some point and
that might be interesting.
Yeah.
The
website.
We haven't revealed a lot of what the
yes.
four players wrote in their backstories.
That's
and we
true.
Won't be doing that today. We don't want to spoil it. I mean, I find when writing a character backstory, give them stuff to care about is
oh,
the most
yeah.
important thing as well.
The rest will follow.
Yeah. The motivation of each character. And I think we were talking about maybe doing another metacast just on backstories when
yeah.
some more of it has tumbled out
yes, yes.
in the course of the narrative, of doing one talking about what we wrote as individuals. One thing I want to address, though, is in terms of giving things something to care about, one of the most interesting aspects of character backstory I always find is family. And this is not meant as a criticism, I find that people who are relatively new to role-playing almost always write themselves as orphans.
Almost exclusively.
Is that your experience as
Very
well?
Very much so. But
I certainly did it when I started.
Yeah, I've given it a lot of thought. I've always thought that actually I did make it a requirement for everyone's backstory is you can't be an orphan in all senses of the word.
Right.
You can't be alone in the world.
Yeah.
You can be an orphan, that's fine.
It's sort of almost an easy route to motivation.
It's
a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But it's
the problem you can end up with is I'm 18. My character's 18 and was an orphan. Okay, cool. So who raised them? What do you mean? Well, they're 18.
Yeah.
You have to go through a whole lot of child years with no parents. Someone raised them. And that's the thing is it sometimes people can use it as a gloss. I am not saying that it is a bad choice. All I mean is it can sometimes come across as you are trying to get to the action a bit quicker, and it's a nice tick box choice sometimes.
And I think it's really interesting that, you know, James, as we said, this is his first game and he has created an orphan character, but it's an orphan character with a very rich family history and someone who deeply cares and is deeply linked to his family. So it's not quite the sort of classic, I'm an orphan with nothing to care about and no ties and I'm looking to avenge something. It's a much more complex backstory.
I would say vengeance is the most common one. I think the character I encountered most is orphan seeking vengeance.
I guess it's a very classic fantasy fiction trope.
It makes sense. And what I would say
that doesn't mean it's always bad, but it's nice to get more links into the world than that, in my experience.
I encounter two types of people tend to pick the vengeance orphan. It feels like a build. And that is people who are completely new to it, and it's because, oh, here's a thing that I can do, and you latch onto things. I get it. I did the same. The second one I have encountered is people who are deliberately trying to make sure the GM doesn't have any leverage against them. They're like, oh, well, I don't have any, my character doesn't have any people it cares about, so there's no one to get kidnapped.
Yes.
My character doesn't have any treasured possessions, so none of them can get stolen.
You can't manipulate my character through the backstory I've written.
I'm going to be honest, you'll have a lot more fun if you let them have some leverage.
Absolutely.
That's the point.
So if you are writing a character backstory, do think about that. Give them hooks into the world. Give them things they care about. Give them a motivation. And the other thing I would advise is doing it in concert with the mechanical side of things. It's great to have a backstory reason for your major skills and the path you're on in terms of mechanical side of things.
Almost always in every game I've run, I've made it a requirement for every single person to have a profession. You'd be amazed how many people don't have jobs.
Yeah.
Unemployment in Fantasyland is just rampant.
Hopefully you've noticed some of that, these things coming out in the game so far, and hopefully you'll notice more coming up soon. Alex, anything you want to add to that? I think that's the...
I feel like I'm out of a job. I feel like I've been mined for all of my information. I've been interrogated, and now Bryn's got his presenting voice on. I'm out of a job. I need to go find myself a new group.
Well, hopefully this has been a nice compliment to episode zero. So you saw before the mechanical side of how we made our characters, and today you've seen some of the other side of what got us to where we began at the beginning of episode one. So I hope you enjoyed listening to that. And if you've got any other questions for us, do come along on our forums, rustyquill.com, or email us
at mail@rustyquill, or drop us a line on Twitter via @therustyquill.
And we hope to hear from you soon. And if you do end up starting your own game, or
let us know.
Please come and let us know. We would so much love to hear about anything like that. And any, as I said earlier, any influences that Rusty Quill has had on you would make us very happy and very excited. So we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter @TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.